Hello, everybody, and welcome to Kentucky Ag Matters, a podcast designed to inform and educate both producers and consumers about all matters affecting agriculture. On this week's show, we visit with Mr. Shane Wiseman, Kentucky Farm Bureau First Vice President. And as always, we'll wrap things up with this week's timely tip. Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoy the show. Well, hello, everybody.
Hey, Jay.
Hello.
How's Dave and Vicky today?
I'm getting along. But all I can tell you.
You're improving.
I am. I told you I get better as the day goes on.
Yeah.
It's at night when it goes backwards.
Yeah.
Backwards, is that a word? That's an Eastern Kentucky word.
Yeah, it is. I think that's universal language. Backwards.
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 Backwards. Mm-hmm. Backwards then. So, yeah, I'm doing better.
He good. Still has some cough drops, so we can keep recording.
His pile is getting smaller.
It is. Yep.
So he's utilizing the medicated cough drops he's got in front of him. That's about the only thing that's keeping him going right now, I think.
Yeah, well, I'm not using the medicated lozenges, as Vicky tried to say yesterday, because those will kind of get you down if you eat too many of them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they're medicated. So she was trying to tell me what I should be doing, you know, the mama. That's
yeah.
Yeah. I said, well, maybe you should try some of those lozenges.
Now I won't be able to say it again after I said it the first time.
Oh, me. We're in Louisville, Kentucky at the home offices of Kentucky Farm Bureau, their state offices. They've been kind enough to set up a lot of shows for us this
Absolutely.
Week and provide a more than ample place for us to record. This has been a wonderful little room. And
Swanky, I think, is the word that I used.
It is.
Until I saw the video place last night, or yesterday afternoon, at the downstairs in
the studio area.
And I thought, you know, wow, that was really swanky.
That was really swanky.
Yeah. Anybody across the state that sees any of the video productions that come from Kentucky Farm Bureau should know or at least have the opportunity to know the studios that produce those.
Oh, so.
Not all the footage, of course, is shot in the studio, but they have a wonderful set, a professional set that would rival any I've seen. As I told David, Vicky had more toys down there than I could play with.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I told that fella that all that equipment looked just like ours did.
Somewhat.
Kind of
resembled it.
We had a microphone to stand.
That's right.
The commodity director's division director, Renee Carrico, was kind enough to set us up with several different interviews. One we're doing today is Mr. Shane Wiseman, the first vice president for Kentucky Farm Bureau. Newly minted, I should say.
Yes, sir.
You're also the retired ag teacher in Clark County. Glad to have you here with us this morning. You told us before we started recording, you've been retired all of 3 days now?
3 days officially, yes, sir.
All right.
If you ask some of my coworkers, they'd say probably last 4 or 5 years, but officially the last 3 days.
You can always count on your coworkers to
help you out.
Push you along.
Oh,
that's
yes.
Exactly right.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's right.
That's one good thing about the three of us, between Vicky and David and I. We've all been working pretty much for the most part the same amount of time.
Right.
So we're all on the same plane together. We're not poking at each other too hard.
That's right.
But we're glad to have you with us today. Won't you just start off, talk a little bit about yourself, your family, your farming operation there in Clark County.
I was born and raised there in Clark County where I'm at. I'm farming on my own family farm that's been in the family for 4 generations. My wife Stephanie and I, we've been married for about 26 years, and I've got 3 kids. My oldest son is 23. His name's Marcus, and he's there on the farm with me. Mm. He's farming full time. He's doing that so I can be up here, actually.
Right.
Right.
Sure.
And then my daughter Caitlin, she's a senior at Moorhead University. She's 20.
Okay.
And she's majoring in animal science with emphasis in beef nutrition. She'll graduate in May. Mm-hmm. Then my youngest son is 17, a senior in high school.
Good gracious.
And all he cares about is fishing. He don't care if the sun doesn't shine tomorrow. All he cares about is fishing.
Yeah. Maybe I need to be interviewing him.
I think he could give you a good interview. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, at least the good thing about that is you'll have one getting out before you have another
going in. That's right.
Know, that's
that
always
is
that's
true.
Right. That's right.
Yeah.
That worked out well for me too. I've got 2 daughters. One's 23. Will be 23 Friday.
Right.
And then one that'll be 20 in May. And our oldest one got out. She graduated college a year early. And so I didn't have two in college at the same time.
Well, that's the way Caitlin was. She's going to graduate in 3 years.
Yeah, that's what Shelby did.
She's going to be so young. Yeah. Yeah. She graduated high school. I tell her this joke with my oldest son. He went to Morehead for a year. He said he'd try it for a year for me. That's what he did. And he did fine. He passed everything. He didn't get straight A's. But the joke is, you know, after a year of Morehead, he had less credits than Caitlin went into Morehead with out of high school. You know, that's the way that worked.
Sounds like my son. When he started at Murray State, he started with 26 hours behind him with all the AP classes and everything. Right. He will graduate in 4 years even, but with two majors and a minor.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And
It's a good thing for folks like that like to do that kind of stuff.
It is.
Because that was not my cup of tea.
Right.
I struggled to get through and was glad to get through. I didn't have any trouble in my ag classes, but those other things that I didn't care nothing about, I struggled through those, and it was, you know, it was just a thing that I just didn't care about, that kind of stuff.
Right.
You know,
we could talk for an hour about all the distractions of somebody has while they're in school.
Yeah.
One of the biggest distractions I had while I was in college was wanting to work.
Yeah.
I didn't want to sit in a classroom. I wanted to be outside working somewhere.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah. I agree.
And I'm sure you saw that throughout your teaching career, kids that, you know, that would probably rather be working than they had been in school.
Absolutely.
Even in high school.
Absolutely. And I was fortunate, being an ag teacher, I was over the co-op program there at the high school. And I worked hard, you know, when they made changes where we get the kids out earlier and get them more credit hours, especially as a senior, that get them out of there quick as we could, because they would rather be out working.
Yep.
And that's a skill we need. We need folks and young folks that want to work.
That's right. My grandfather always told me, if you don't learn to work when you're young, you're sure not going to work when you're old.
That's right.
Yeah. There's a lot of truth in that. Yep.
It is absolutely the truth. And
I say that's one of the biggest downfalls I see of our society today. And some of it is within agriculture. You know, we've made so many advances in agriculture, you know, and we're not out there. You know, every farm doesn't have 2 or 3 acres of tobacco. You know, we're not out there picking up square bales of hay and learning how to drive. And that's how I learned how to drive is
absolutely
started out driving a tractor picking up hay. Mm-hmm. And, buddy, I'm going to tell you right now, if you let out on the clutch and you didn't do that just exactly like you're supposed to, you got to reload that whole load of hay. And my dad told me that. You know, he said, you throw that off,
you're going to put it back on by yourself.
Right. Yeah.
And I did that one time. And I thought, I'm never doing that again. And so I was just as easy as I could be with the clutch from then on.
Right.
So he taught you a lesson. You think about that. But, you know, I think that is a downfall of our society, is we just don't have those jobs that those kids can learn how to work. You know, every farm doesn't have 2 or 3 acres of tobacco. And, you know, he doesn't hire kids after school. After school, I went and cut tobacco.
Right.
You know, and on Saturdays, I cut tobacco when I was in the fall of the year. For Mr. Ladd, my ag teacher, and enjoyed that, you know, and made good money. And
time was when Shane and I were in school at Eastern together, it was a big deal to get hooked up with one of those big tobacco farms in and around Lexington, where you could go up and make a dollar or two more an hour, and have a lot more hours doing a lot more things if you wanted to.
Right,
and that was a big deal to try to get involved with, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, and I think the co-op program is so good, because it introduces some of those students to different jobs, and even the ones that aren't leaving school to go to the farm they grew up that they're on and work on the farm. It gives those students opportunities to find employment, ag jobs, that don't have the opportunity to work on a farm.
Absolutely.
But they also learn those skills, and learning to work with people, and just, you know, managing your money. The list goes on and on for reasons why it's good for kids to work.
Absolutely.
And even not just co-op, but just in general working. I know my husband and I, you know, when our kids turned 16, that was the thing. You're going to work.
That's right.
You're going to have a job. And it was more for them just learning responsibility and all of the – and teaching them how to work than it was the minimum wage that they was making.
Right, right.
You know, it was more to
more
that.
More of a lesson. That's right, yeah.
But I think, too, David, to your point, I think there's less places and less opportunities for these high school kids to work too, because there's not as many mom and pop shops that would hire these kids to come in the afternoons when they get out of school and work. I know right. In Dixon, we've got a little grocery store there, Townsend's Food Center, and I don't know how many kids over the years has worked at town. My daughter worked there, but it's still there, but it's just different. There's just not as many places to work.
So many of those jobs that were occupied by teenagers 20 and 30 years ago is some adult's second job now.
Yes,
a lot of times it's hard for kids to get a job because of an adult actually filling their job now.
And sports are year-round now too, which in those students that play sports, it's harder for them to play the sport and work.
And keep a job, that's right.
David was talking about working in tobacco. When Jane and I were in school, Teresa Long was the secretary there in the ag department. Her husband raised a lot of tobacco. And she was the unofficial labor organizer for her husband because she funneled students from the ag classes out to him. And if you were good, he'd take you in the wintertime to the tobacco warehouse to work there too, where he did. Right. And did you ever work out there for Wayne?
I didn't, because we was always putting our own up.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
But talk a little bit about your farming operation and what it consists of and what all you all are doing nowadays.
Okay. Our main enterprise is cow-calf production. We raise a lot of cows and calves, and we wean our calves off and grow them out as yearlings. Try to sell them out as yearlings. Occasionally, I'll buy a few feeders and background and put with them to make larger groups.
Right.
But mostly just keeping my own, weaning my own, and growing them out. We've got a little over 400 mama cows we're taking care of. And we raise a little bit of corn and soybeans. We raised tobacco till 2 years ago. I raised tobacco my whole life till two years ago. And finally, just the labor was just such an issue, and everything was a struggle, and we weren't making enough money to justify the amount of time it was taking. Mm-hmm. And we just finally decided to give it up. Yeah. And you know, my son that I told you is 23 now, he really didn't want me to give it up. He wanted to keep raising it. And but it just didn't fit our operation anymore. It's just time. Yeah. And it was one of the hardest decisions I ever made. And everybody says, hey, how much do you miss it? You know, I miss watching it grow. I always enjoyed that part. I love cultivating it and just going out and being in it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When it come time to house it, you know, it was just a chore and a headache, no doubt about that. But I was fortunate because the last couple of years, the cattle markets got better. So to say I've missed the money, I'm sure I've missed some of it. But for what we were making in it, I don't think. You know, we dwindled down. We were down to about 40 acres.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we were raising. And, you know, we had years there. We was raising close to 100 there for several years.
You know, you've seen the realization, though, that a lot of Kentucky farmers did not think they would be able to do, and that was be able to have a farm, maintain a farm, without tobacco.
That's right. And that's, you know, the family farms there that we have at home, that's what paid for them. That's, you know, that's what sent me through school when I went to school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the tobacco paid for a lot of things there in Clark County because, you know, we're not a big, like Western Kentucky, it's not a lot of flat land, row crop area. You know, we call them patches is what we call them at home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we raise 5 acres of tobacco here, 3 acres of tobacco in this corner.
Right.
You know, that's, you know, we had very little land that we could, that was croppable, and we had to make the best use of it.
Sure.
Yeah, sure.
And, you know, that's just the way it was back then.
Mm-hmm.
For me, growing up, rotating a tobacco crop meant this end of the bottom or that end of the bottom, because that was the only tillable land we had.
Right, that's right. That's right. No, I get it.
Everything else had rock underneath it and was pasture or a hillside.
That's right.
So, you know, you spent a career in the classroom, retired from that now, but reflect just a little bit about what it meant to be an ag teacher and maybe the impact that you and none of us like to be self-serving, but I'm sure you had the chance to impact a lot of lives throughout your career. How many years did you teach?
26.
Wow.
26. I enjoyed it. It was a hard decision to decide to retire and do this, to go to the Farm Bureau gig. And because I love the kids. Kids is the best part of the job, hands down. Man. Didn't always like everything come out of the front office, but I always loved
it. I have the same problem.
Yeah, I understand.
That sounds familiar to every good teacher I've ever had.
That's right.
They love the kids.
Love the kids, that's right. But, you know, originally when I went to school, when I was at Eastern, I wanted to major in ag education just in case I ever had to use it, but I never planned to teach. Mm. I really didn't. And when after I graduated, there was a job opened in Estill County, and Asa Witt called me, the ag teacher up there, and Estill County was in our region, mm-hmm. and Asa knew me well, where I was a state mm-hmm. officer and stuff.
Sure.
And he said, "I want you to apply." And I said, "Yeah." So I just don't think I'm interested. He came and saw me three times. The third time I started, I'll apply. So I applied and got it, and I loved it.
Yeah.
I loved it. And I thought, you know, this is crazy. But I'd worked so hard. I'd set a year out. I'd done graduated from school and been out a year farming, mm-hmm. and I'd built up the farming operation some. I'd rented more land, borrowed more money, bought more cows. And so I was fortunate there. I had a good guy working with me at the time, and he stayed with me. And the first year, I taught the first year in Estill County, and then the second year, there was a job came open in Clark County there at home. Mm-hmm. So I got to transfer back to home right off the bat, which was very fortunate. A lot of people can't say that.
Yep.
So I came back there, and the first year I was in Clark County, I had a student, Jeremy Jones, and just a great kid, and he wanted to help me some, and he was helping me out on the side, and he stayed with me, helping me there for 2 or 3 years. He became a full partner. Yep. And he was a partner mm-hmm. with me for about 20 years till Marcus got old enough to be in with me, and we decided to split because his kids was older too, and he's doing his operation. But it worked out good. But that would have never, you know, just all. It's amazing how things fall together.
Sure mm-hmm. it is.
But that's a perfect example, you know. And I have students like that every year that's outstanding students. And I mean, I just fortunate it. Being in the ag department, you know, it's not like you're teaching math or English. You know, you don't have the kid coming in that just dreads coming to class. You got the kids that want to be at class. Mm-hmm. You know. Tardy's the class isn't the issue in my room
because they want to be
there.
Be
that's right. Yeah. They want to be there. Yep. The trouble I have is getting rid of them. You know, they want to skip math and stay in there and work on something in the shop or you know, help some way they can if we're doing something. And you know, when I started teaching back at Clark County, of course, the whole time I was in school at Clark County, we raised a tobacco crop.
Yep, we did too in Treat County.
Yeah,
yep.
We had our own tobacco crop.
Yep.
You know, nowadays I guess we'd end up on the news if something like that happened.
Yep. Yep.
But, you know, we stripped it right there in the shop. We did it all.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's just the way it was, just different times.
And cut tobacco during school.
But it's good for kids, you know, and I feel like it was good for kids to see how hard a work that was and to appreciate that and have respect for people that did that kind of thing.
Yes.
And, but you know, people nowadays wouldn't see it that way.
Yep.
Well, I think that's awesome, too, because, you know, if you don't live on a farm that has tobacco or work for a farm, I mean, there's a lot of people that has no idea what goes into raising tobacco and stripping it. And I mean, just all of that. And I think, you know, that those real life hands-on things is where you really learn and appreciate things, you know. And I think we think back about all of us, you know, and many guests that we have, like I'd mentioned earlier, was in FFA. Most kids grew up on a farm. There was no question if they was going to be taking ag classes and be in FFA. I'm thankful that I was in FFA. And you know, the ag advisors, they were more than just teachers.
Right.
You know, they really were. And they are somebody that these students really look up to, and they go to them for advice and other teachers too. Don't get me wrong.
No.
My
You're
daughter's
right.
a teacher.
Yeah. Right.
But there was just, But there's something special about those ag teachers and how they interact with their students.
Yeah,
right. It's just a difference. It's just different, and it's exactly because of what you said. Those kids want to be there. That's where they want to spend all their time when they're in school. And I think it's great for a lot of kids, and a lot of kids that don't grow up on a farm, they end up going and majoring in agriculture and having great ag careers and never once really even probably worked on a farm but agriculture had become special to them through FFA.
So many people come from a small farm background and it was never going to be an option.
Right.
They might have had, well, just like me, I mean, you know, I grew up on a farm, but both my parents had off farm jobs, and going back to that specific farm as a livelihood never was going to be an option.
Wasn't an option,
You mentioned your daughter's in school and majored in animal science, did you say?
Yes, sir.
What's her thoughts? Is she going to end up in a classroom maybe? Or?
No. I don't know. I mean, I can't answer that for sure, but originally her thoughts was, is, you know, with the beef nutrition, she was mm-hmm. wanting to work with the animals. She did not want to go to a feed company or something like that. She has applied to some internships out west at some feedlots.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I wasn't particularly thrilled about that, but I didn't say anything because, you know, I want her to do what she wants to do and that's try to help her any way I can. But but she wants to work directly with animals on that end of it. She don't said, you know, I told her I could try to help her get in at Cargill. There's a Cargill there in Winchester.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, I'll try to help you get in there. She said, I want to work with the animals. She said, I want to go to a feedlot.
Yep.
So, but since then, she's got a pretty serious boyfriend, and I don't know if that'll hold her closer to home or not.
That changes things sometimes.
It does. It does. It does. Matter of fact, she's not mentioned the internship for about the last 6 months. So,
there you go.
And I haven't brought it up either.
He a local boy?
Local. Yeah, there in Winchester. Yeah, good kid.
You know, awesome. David and I talked about this, I think, yesterday or sometime on the ride, one of the rides anyway. You know, when you get out of college or you go into college and you're majoring in something, but you really don't have any, a lot of times you don't really have any idea what your plans are when you get out. Or for me anyway, I mean, I majored when I went to Murray State in agriculture with an emphasis in agronomy.
Right.
And honestly, when I went that direction, I was thinking I wanted to go to work at that time. It was called the Soil Conservation Service. I had co-opted through FFA. Through the ag there and at the local conservation district and loved it. And that was really the direction I thought I was going. Well, that is not the direction that I went.
Right.
But I don't regret any direction that, you know, I've been happy. I was be able to stay at home and I was a crop consultant for a few years. But sometimes where life ends up taking us is not exactly where we thought we was going to go when we started the journey, you know.
Right.
And, my niece Campbell is a freshman at high school now, and she's in her first ag class, and she's just starting off, and I'm excited, you know, for her to see kind of where that's going to take her. But.
Right.
I know my son asked me one time, he said, Dad, he said, when did you know that you wanted to be an extension agent for your career? And I smiled. I said, when they offered me the job.
When they hired me. That's right. That's right. That's right.
No. Oh, babe, but you've spent a lot of time in the classroom working now in your new role with Farm Bureau. Tell us a little bit about your Farm Bureau story and where you first became involved with Farm Bureau and maybe how that all started.
Well, it goes back to FFA. I was the president as a junior. I guess it was my junior year. We were having a beef night at the high school. We had the local veterinary come up to talk, and we invited the community out, and we asked Farm Bureau if they'd supply the meal, and they said sure, they'd be glad to. And at the time, y'all may remember John Hendricks, I'm sure some mm-hmm. people listening will.
Yep.
He was our president, mm-hmm. and Rick Mink was our agency manager, that still is. And they came to the meeting that night, and I ran the meeting, or I was in charge, the FFA was in charge of the meeting. Well, after it was over, they came up to me and said that they were trying to get the Young Farmer Program going in Clark County, trying to get it started.
Mm-hmm.
Said, we need some help. Said, would you be interested? And I said, well, I don't know. I said, I've talked to my parents. I mean, I know nothing about it. And I went home and talked to Dad. And I said, you know, they've asked me to help this start the Young Farmer Program in Clark County. He said, Farm Bureau did. I said, yeah. He said, all I've ever done is buy insurance from Farm Bureau. And he said, you know, he didn't realize the Federation side of it. And I said, he said, but they're good people. He said, I'd say you better stick with them. So, I agreed, and I got in, and I helped them start the Young Farmer Program there in Clark County. And I remember I went to the first Young Farmer outing. They had to drive me because I didn't have a driver's license. All I had was my permit. It was in June. I'd got my permit, and I didn't have my driver's license. So they drove me down there, and we went down there, and it's big time, and I enjoyed it. Yeah. And I just got started like that, and as time progressed, you know, I started going to annual meetings and getting more involved. And, of course, John Hendricks was on the state board and was first vice president. He passed away.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the policy was this: if a board member passes away while they're in that position, the local president finishes their term.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was president at the time when John passed away in 2010.
Right.
So I came on the board at that time, and I just ended up staying. I got reelected and enjoyed it, and it kind of like hand in glove went together.
Mm-hmm.
And it really complemented the ag teaching and the farming, and you know, it all worked good together. So
mm-hmm.
I was busy and I was gone a lot, but I was very fortunate with the public job as teaching school that I had principals and superintendents that you know that they were good with that, so mm-hmm. it worked out good. But so I got in there in 10, and since 2010 I've been on the state board, and I've served on several state committees, American mm-hmm. Farm Bureau committees, and National Cattlemen's.
Yeah,
just kind of rolled together.
Well, you know, it all starts sometimes by somebody asking. You know, when we think about trying to recruit leaders and folks to be a part and maybe step out of their comfort zone and to get involved with an organization, oftentimes that's what it takes, is somebody saying, hey, would you be interested in doing this?
And I had no idea that opportunity was even there.
Yeah.
Right.
If they hadn't said anything to me, I wouldn't be yeah. sitting here right now.
Right. Right. And I think that's the case even today.
Yeah.
And many times, folks may just not know the opportunity is there. They may not even know how to get started. So.
Right. Well, it's great that we have people like Shane in leadership roles now. And,
yes.
And, you know, for those folks to be able to go back to your county and see some of those younger people being involved, says, hey, we've got this program, this Young Farmers Program, or we've got this Generation Bridge Program that you may be interested in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's so important for the future of Farm Bureau
yeah.
to be able to continue to do the things that we're doing. And we've said it 100 times, but I'll say it again. You don't have to have Farm Bureau insurance to be a Farm Bureau member.
Absolutely not.
You can be a member and take advantage of those member benefits.
Absolutely.
Without buying their insurance. There's nobody holding a gun to your head to buy their insurance, but it is a good product. That is a member benefit.
That's right.
For our members. However, they do so much more for agriculture in Kentucky than you know, they're all of agriculture. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got a lot of commodity groups that focus a lot on different commodities, but Kentucky Farm Bureau is everybody.
That's right.
And they're
a voice for agriculture.
They're a voice for agriculture, and they're when they go to the table in Frankfort or Washington D.C. with American Farm Bureau, they know they're there. Mm-hmm. You know, they've got a recognized voice. And, you know, what they do for us in agriculture is so, so very important, and we appreciate that for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
I've heard legislators before say, when Farm Bureau speaks, we listen. I mean, you know, we've all heard that, and that didn't just happen by chance.
That's right.
That happened because of the organization and the structure and the grassroots.
That's right.
And how those issues and how those how they come from the grassroots county level and work through the system, and that speaks volumes.
It does. It speaks not only to the progress and the process that takes those leaders from that county board all the way up into assuming a state level position right. now, but it also speaks to the quality of individuals that Farm Bureau has helped culture and groom and grow to get right. into these positions. Our legislators look at the Farm Bureau leaders not just as you know someone they deal with professionally, but they look to their leadership and friendship as well.
Absolutely. So and most of them carry our policy book with them. I like
yes.
that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. Well, and they call on you sometimes to say, absolutely. Hey, what are your thoughts on this? Yeah, what are you hearing? What are you thinking? What are you all thinking? And,
right. Well, it's always an effort to, you know, there's that Washington, D.C. trip or the
congressional tour.
Congressional yes. tour. That is a fantastic yes, thing to go.
Right.
Had the opportunity to go on that when I was in the LEAD program, and that was fantastic. And I've always wanted to go back. It just never has worked out. And one day I'm going back.
Right.
And we've got some younger people that are in our county that are going to try to go this year, and that's great.
It is.
We've got a fantastic group of younger people in our county that are taking on leadership roles and doing different things. And that's so important to get those folks involved in the LEAD program and mm-hmm. and to get some of the other folks, kind of the mid-age group folks in that Generation Bridge deal,
right?
And get them involved in that program, and you know, there's nobody left out. You know, everybody's kind of got a little group that they can go with and do some things with, and I think that's so important. Our leadership skills, we continue to be able to hone those even when we get mm-hmm. to our age. You know, yep. when you get 50 and above, you know, yep. you can continue right. to hone those skills as you get older and kind of step into some leadership roles within Farm Bureau.
Well, that's right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you just talk about the legislatures and stuff. You know, Congressman Barr, he has called numerous times to ask questions or actually had us come to Lexington to his office and meet with us because he says, I'm not a cattle farmer. Yeah. He said, I don't know what the issues are or how to handle this issue that's out. And that's really good that they think enough of us to ask that question.
Absolutely.
You know, he said, if it's a banking issue, I can handle that. But he said, he'll tell you. He said, I'm not a cattle farmer. Yep.
But he knows who to call.
That's right.
And that's the thing. We've all heard our whole lives from the time we were probably middle school and up. It's you don't have to know all the answers. You just got to know where to get them.
That's right.
Yep. And that is a skill that, you know, that's just something we all, you know, that all of us need to remember that because you're not going to know everything, but you got to know who to call. And and when you're the one that they're calling.
Right. Makes you feel pretty good.
It does.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You're on their speed dial, so to speak.
And not that we have the answers, but we can get them.
Right.
Yep.
But they also know that information is not self-served either. Mm-hmm. It's coming. It's covering everybody.
You know, and I think having that policy book that we work on every December at the annual meeting, I think that's so important to be able to pass along to those legislative folks. You know, this is our policy on this, and it's got all the subjects. I mean, it's black and white. It's right there. You know, and then them being able to call folks like yourself, Shane, and talk about the issues and even get more educated about that. And, you know, providing all those folks with that policy book, I think, is so important.
It's a big, big deal. Our elected officials are pulled in so many different directions. They're approached every time they walk out the door by somebody wanting something from them. And, you know, none of us possess the ability to remember every little thing that somebody needs. So to have that policy book in black and white, as you said, David, to carry around with them to know Farm Bureau stance and how that – and it's not just a Farm Bureau thing. It's how these things will impact our communities.
Right.
It's a big deal.
And I love that anytime an elected official gets to come to the annual meeting and they see that it is the group that's making these decisions. Yep. It's not two or three people sitting up here in an office.
No. Nope.
It's making this policy.
Yep.
You know, we got a room full there of 12 or 1,400 people sitting in there while we're discussing this policy. And I like that they get to see that. And they appreciate it. They'll tell you that.
And you have that during that time, you know, you have the opportunity to get up and disagree with the
policy
and voice your concern about a policy or bring forth new policy that you know, and it is a very democratic process. And, you know, everything that you know, we do comes from a lot of times, well, all the time, it comes from the county level.
That's right.
You know, those resolutions come from the county level and come to the resolution committee. And there's no way that we could do that as a membership when we get together is to go through all the resolutions.
No.
So we've got a great resolutions committee, the way that process works, very democratic. And they bring forth the resolutions that they feel like are the ones that need to be brought forward. But you still have the opportunity, even if it didn't make it past the resolutions committee, you still have that opportunity
to bring it up. That's right.
You know,
and it's grassroots is what it is. If it's not grassroots, there's no such thing.
Well, I think that's a good way of putting it. Whether it's at the state level or at that local county level, Farm Bureau has long since been one of the greatest partners that Extension has had to work with.
Yep.
Whether it's, you know, something like sponsoring a meal, like you mentioned, we've all had our local Farm Bureau offices and boards of the Federation boards do that for us.
Yep.
But then I think of bigger things where they've always stepped in and helped too. When you look at some of the devastation we've gone through the past couple of years, the flood in eastern Kentucky, the tornado in western Kentucky, follow-up storms, you know, this past March. There was a lot more work done by Farm Bureau besides just answering insurance claims.
Oh, absolutely.
And that was the Federation work that has stepped out and worked in all of our communities to help organized donations, to help with donations. Being in one of those counties in Madisonville, Hopkins County, Dawson Springs specifically, that experienced a lot of that damage in the 2021 tornadoes, I appreciate everything that Farm Bureau did.
Absolutely.
Both on a state level and on that grassroots level, be it insurance or Federation.
to switch gears a little bit, you know, you had mentioned you had been on the state board since 2010, I believe.
Yes.
What was it? I know it wasn't an easy decision for you to make the decision to move from the state board and to run for the role, the position as the first vice chair that you are today.
Right.
Talk a little bit about kind of the thought process or the reason that you decided that, okay, it's time. I'm gonna do this, and kind of talk about that and some, what are some things that that you're, you know, maybe looking forward to doing, or some things that you want to try to do in your tenure in this role.
Okay, the word you just said, timing. That was the big thing. You know, the positions don't come open very often. And I thought, you know, if I wanted to do this, that this was the time for me to do it, because I was toward the end of my career with school teaching, and I've been on the board for about 13, 14 years now, and, and you know, I know that's going to end eventually, so I figured, you know, as far as timing, it was time. But I also, you know, I just, the more I'm involved in Farm Bureau, the more I realize they believe what I believe. And they have the passion for agriculture that I have for agriculture. And, you know, they want to leave this world better place than what we found it. And, I mean, that just encourages me and wants me to be more involved. And I felt like, you know, that I could do this role. And you know, it's going to take an army. It's going to take, you know, a lot of effort on a lot of people. But I'm very fortunate Farm Bureau has such good employees and good people that support them in all the counties. You know, that I think I can do this, and I want to continue to move ag forward. I felt like, you know, that's what I needed to do and where I needed to be. You know, I thought long and hard about it because, you know, I was ready to retire and thought, you know, I can just go home and farm, sit under the shade tree, so to speak. But that's not where I think I need to be. I think I need to be right here where I'm at, trying to do what I can to help agriculture and get the word out. And, you know, as an ag teacher in the past, I felt like it's been so important to educate students, but to educate everybody on the importance of agriculture and the truths about agriculture. Mm-hmm. Nothing gripes me more than when I hear something that's an untruth where people's just trying to run down agriculture.
Yeah.
And I felt like in this role, this was one of those positives where I could get my voice out even more.
Absolutely.
You know, and I just, you know, I just have a passion for agriculture, and I have a passion for Farm Bureau. Yeah. And they really go hand in hand. And I love, you know, we talked about the policy and stuff. I love how that's put together. Yeah. I love that we all go in and do this together. Yeah. You know, it's not just one person doing something. And
yeah.
That's
you know, Shane, we've talked about it on this program many times about, you know, if folks in agriculture don't tell our story, there's going to be somebody that tells it.
That's right.
And it may or may not be correct.
Right.
So it's very important for even our farmers, the ones that are, I mean, I know lots of farmers that are good at farming, but they're not real good public speakers
telling their story,
or they're not really good at telling their story. But we have got to get to the point where we're sharing the story of agriculture and sharing the true story,
right?
Not one that's made up and not one that's not true, and you know, all of those things. We've got to, all of us have got to be able to tell our story. And I tell people all the time, I feel like that as an extension agent, that's kind of my first job is to promote agriculture.
Right.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and I feel like us in this room, we do that and we try to do that. But we also encourage our producers to get out there and tell their story too, because it's so important for people that are involved in production agriculture.
Right.
To get out there and tell their story.
And I feel like it's more important today than it's ever been.
Absolutely.
Because like just sitting in the classroom when I first started, you know, I had students that was one or two generations removed from the farm. Now I've got students that's three and four generations removed. You know, before I had students, you know, they had grandparents that had a farm. Mm-hmm. So they understood if they seen a cow laying down, you know, beside the road that was trying to calve or something. You know, nowadays, you know, I've had a call myself from the sheriff's called. Yep. And said, somebody called and said, there's a cow laying down. She's having problems. She was just having a calf. There was nothing wrong.
But, yep.
You know, people didn't know that. Right. And it's so important that we do get that word out and let them know.
Yeah.
You know, it's just it's just getting farther. You know, the students and kids and even the young adults now are so far from agriculture, they have no idea what you know what's normal and what's not normal.
And I think
they don't
too,
understand.
It's it's important too sometimes to share the struggles.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, I think, you know, there's that saying, the good, bad, and the ugly. And you know, sometimes it's important for us to share the struggles that agriculture has too. And not just the normal, you know, like what you were, the example you was given and what's normal and what's not. But, you know, the general folks out there that are, you know, not part of the farm, ever been part of the farm, it's they don't understand just the cost of production alone. If that's the only aspect you want to talk about, is that what goes in to farming and the many different things, the many different hats that a farmer wears. They're, I mean, I've said it many times, they're electricians, they're marketing folks, they're mentors, they're mechanics.
That's right.
There's so many different things that it's hard to grasp.
Absolutely.
And we don't do a real good job of sharing that part of the story.
Right.
You know, everybody wants to, they like the tractors and the that part of it, but
yeah, that's
there's
right.
a whole lot more to it.
That's right. And you know, I worry about the safety of farmers nowadays as well.
Yes.
You know, as the, you know, population grows and there's more people, you know, Clark County and Winchester are still a rural community, but the public just don't have the respect for the farmer driving down the road on the tractor.
Yeah.
Opening the gates, blocking the road just a little bit because they got a wagon hooked to them. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm concerned about the safety, you know, just in general of the farmers nowadays. You know, that's a concern to me.
We hit safety a lot on this show. Actually, one of the shows we did last year, we had a local sheriff come in and sit down and just talk about road safety.
Right.
And I don't think that message is preached enough.
No.
We always talk about it in the spring and the fall, but like, you, especially the part of the state where we're from, where there's a lot of small livestock farms, there's tractors pulling something up and down the road every day.
Right.
You know, year round. Mm-hmm. So.
And we got farms in the community now that when I was a boy or, you know, 15 years ago, we would drive tractors across town, but now we put them on trailers and haul them. Just because it's not safe to try to drive them across. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yep.
Times have changed.
They have.
Yeah.
You talk about, both of you were talking about telling the story. One of the things, and I guess this is a pet peeve of mine, I wish we could all tell the same story. In other words, I wish we all had a unified voice across all forms of agriculture.
Yep.
It's getting too easy for certain groups to take pop shots, maybe at other groups, to get a market advantage.
Right. Yeah.
And specifically, I think about commercial food production versus maybe the organic production or that type of market. We're all in this business together. Groups like Farm Bureau are working on an extension. We're working on behalf of everyone.
Absolutely.
And it'd be nice if everybody could get on the same page, because there's a bigger enemy out there than each other when it comes to modern agriculture, for sure.
We're so much stronger unified.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
That's right.
You know, Shane, one of the things we always try to do towards the end of this show is we like to wrap things up with a timely tip. Sometimes it's pertinent to the time of the year that it is. Sometimes maybe it's pertinent to the conversation that we had. Being here today with you and talking about your new role with Farm Bureau, we thought a good timely tip would be for our listeners to take time to educate themselves on current issues affecting agriculture. And with that, be willing to do something about it. Once you know something about that issue, maybe be willing to make that follow-up call to an elected official, whether it's a local official or one of our state legislators, to make sure they understand what the impact of these are, you know, to our personal lives in the county.
Right, absolutely. That's a good one.
So we felt that was a good way to wrap things up.
Yes, sir.
But, Shane, we appreciate you being here with us today. We want to thank you for this week's information. And thanks to our listeners for joining in. We hope you've enjoyed our show, and we'll make plans to join us again next week for our next episode. And until then, remember, Kentucky Ag matters.